This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. When we think of Southern Gothic, a lot of names come to mind. Flannery O'Connor, William Faulkner, Cormac McCarthy. Critics include North Carolina-based author David Joy in that category as well. His new novel, The Weight of This World, takes us into a gritty, seamy world in rural Appalachia. Characters are tormented by their own demons, sometimes by the past. David Joy's in Atlanta tonight for a book talk. Thank you so much for being with us, David.
No, thank you for having me.
So I understand that the first book tour was pretty exhausting for you on a number of levels. Is the second one any better?
I'd like to think that I'm getting better at it, but the reality is I have pretty bad anxiety normally anyways, and I live in a place where I live in a very rural section of Appalachia. I don't interact with very many people on a daily basis. I don't travel. And so outside of book tours, you know, I don't really travel around. And so, you know, that first book tour was really exhausting. It was 19 cities in 21 days, and then the paperback was another dozen cities. And so, you know, I wind up coming home just incredibly exhausted. And so I'd like to think that I'm getting better at it, but the reality is, you know, I'm still living in a constant anxiety attack.
No. So, I mean, the way you've described your writing environment to me feels really a huge contrast with the subject matter you're writing about. So you're writing about, both in this one and your first novel, they're very gritty. I mean, there's murder, there's violence, there's talk about anxiety. There's this balance between the literature, the literary value, and then the just a raw, gritty action that's going on. And yet I read that you need like perfect peace and silence in order to write. How do you achieve that?
You know, I think that balance of kind of poetry mixed with brutality, I think that's something, you know, I learned from writers like William Gay. You know, a short story like The Paper Hanger. At the end of that story, you know, there's a child that's murdered, and I can remember the language of his description right this second. It's some of the most beautiful language I've ever read. And so that juxtaposition of brutality versus really, really poetic language, I think that's coming from, you know, writers like William Gay and writers like Ron Rash, Larry Brown, Daniel Woodrell. As far as needing perfect peace and quiet, I'm finishing a novel right now, and when I have to do ordinary things, like when I have to go to Walmart because I have to buy groceries, or if I have to go cook myself lunch, it feels like I'm living in a dream world. And I guess that's because it's so involved to get into a story that it's really hard to separate yourself. And so really, I think that's why, you know, I need the space and I need the peace and quiet, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to kind of live inside of that narrative.
So when you say Southern Gothic, one of the first names that comes to mind is Flannery O'Connor. And probably the best known work of hers is A Good Man is Hard to Find. That's a short story she wrote about a family trip. So here's a little snippet of her Flannery O'Connor reading part of that story in 1957.
She saw the man's face twisted close to her own, as if he were going to cry, and she murmured, "Why, you're one of my babies. You're one of my own children." She reached out and touched him on the shoulder. The misfit sprang back as if a snake had bitten him and shot her three times through the chest.
So you have made the distinction between Southern Gothic, like Flannery O'Connor wrote, and what you call Appalachian noir. What is the difference?
When I think of Gothic, to be quite honest with you, I more think of people like Edgar Allan Poe than I do people like Flannery O'Connor. You know, people always use that term, the Southern Gothic, and for me, I don't know if I kind of have an aversion to that term or what it is. You know, for me, I like the terms grit lit. I like the terms the Rough South. You know, people always talked about Larry Brown's Rough South, and ultimately, I think they're all kind of talking about the same thing, and that's definitely the lineage and tradition that I'm coming out of. You know, I think starting with Faulkner and then carrying on later into O'Connor and Cormac McCarthy, you know, right in the 60s. And then in the 80s, we get Larry Brown, we get William Gay, we get Harry Cruz, and then on into Barry Hanna. And you know, that's the same tradition that's being continued today and kind of led by a writer like Ron Rash. But that's kind of the lineage that I'm in, whatever you want to term it. I think the stylistically, I think it's very similar.
So then let's hear from another voice that we associate with this genre, and that's William Faulkner. And this is Faulkner himself in the late 50s, and he's talking to an English class at the University of Virginia.
Man is face, frail, fragile, flesh and bone, mostly water, in a ramshackle universe stuck together with electricity, faced with problems which are usually bigger than he is. Does he face it? Does it lick him? That, I think, is what anyone writes about.
That comment of Faulkner's actually really reminds me of both your novels. You make no excuses for your characters, who are quite flawed and in many ways very fragile. Where does this attraction to the sort of, not an anti-hero, but a sort of struggling human being, someone who is very much a work in progress, why do you like to write about that kind of person?
I think I'm really interested in trying to get to the humanity of a character. You know, Larry Brown said one time, he said, of his own work, he said, it's all right for you to call it brutal, but just admit by God that it's honest. And I think, you know, for me, it's that same type of thing. I was kind of thinking about, you know, right before a book tour and right before a book comes out, you wind up having to write all of these essays for different people and different things. And so I've spent a lot of time lately really trying to think about, you know, why I write the types of things I write. And one of the things is I think I'm interested in going to the darkest places imaginable and trying to find some aspect of humanity. Because if I couldn't, I would lose hope in the world. I think in a lot of ways, and that may be a selfish reason, but I do think in a lot of ways that's what I'm trying to do as an artist. You know, if I can go to the darkest places imaginable, and I can find something that I can connect with, then all of a sudden that opens an entire world up to conversation. And so, you know, really, if readers don't take anything else away from my work, you know, that's what I would want them to take away.
Well, I mean, we're talking in very high terms about literature, but these are just really good reads. I mean, they just keep you in your seat. On the other hand, there are these deeper themes going on, and this new book is so much centered around trauma and sort of the way our past affects our present life and the balance between making new choices as opposed to the choices that have already been made in many ways.
Yeah.
What is it in Appalachia itself? What is it, do you think, that people don't understand about the people who live there and the area?
Well, I think outside of the region, you know, people want to believe a very specific thing, and I think that's because it makes it easier.
Uneducated.
You know, and ultimately I think that's just easier. You know, if we can say, well, all of these people are just like this, and you know, I mean, within the past year, with a book like J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy, you know, I think in a lot of ways they were trying to create a broad voting bloc. They were trying to say, well, they're all like this, and that's why this happened. Just because that's easier. The reality is that
you mean this happened. You're referring to the election of Donald Trump.
Yeah. You know, when the reality is that this place is incredibly complex. You know, when people talk about Appalachia, one of the things is they're only talking about West Virginia and Kentucky. You know, they're not talking about a region that stretches from Mississippi to Maine. You know, there's not coal where I live. You know, what the biggest issue we've been facing forever is unrestricted land development. They're God-fearing people and the godless. You know, they're people who do what they have to do, working 70 hours a week to survive, and there are people who break in houses. It's not any different than anywhere else in America in that sense. You know, you have incredible diversity here. And so really, I think that's the, you know, that's the biggest issue I face when I hit the road, because people always, you know, I've had people say, well, I had somebody say, well, how do they feel about the books where you live? And before I could answer, the woman looked at me and said, or can they read? And, you know, my response was, of course they can read. You know, and it was, and we have shoes too, you know. and so I think, you know, people that come out of this place were defensive, but it's also because we have to be defensive, because the picture that's typically painted of the entire region is inaccurate.
So you don't create outlines of your books, which really surprises me when I'm reading them. I mean, they're clearly character driven, and I wonder how often do your characters surprise you by where they take the story?
Yeah, I all the time. You know, and so recently, I was finishing a novel that I'm on contract for, and right up to the last day, you know, when you start getting to the end of a book, you can really start to see where you think it's going to go, probably more so than in the beginning or anywhere else. But even then, right up to the end, you know, those characters were surprising me every day. And I was having a conversation with a writer named Julia Franks recently, and for her, she said that she knows the ending first, which was really interesting to me, because that I don't know anything about the ending. And what I told her was that if I did, I don't think I would write the book. I think the part of the excitement and the fun for me is kind of following these characters blindly and just seeing where they take me.
Wait, so no, I'm not going to, no spoilers, but your first novel, which has a surprise at the end, you didn't know that was coming?
No. I honestly didn't know what happened until Jacob was standing in that room.
Wow.
I truly did not. You know, I knew that I didn't think it would end well.
And it didn't.
yeah, but until he walked into that house and found what he found, I had no clue that was there. And I can remember reaching a point in that book where, especially at the very end, where I just sat there and I cried because I didn't know where it was going until right then. And when I knew, you know, there was incredible emotion that came with that.
I can imagine. And that's the most detail we're going to get, because I hope people read the book for themselves. David Joy is author of the new book, The Weight of This World. He'll speak tonight at Acapella Books. His visit is part of the Writers at the Wrecking Bar series, and it starts at 7 o'clock. David, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.